Welcome back to another episode of the D'Antonio Wingcast. KP2, how you living?
I'm living large. How are you living?
I'm doing well. If you can't tell, I just had a cup of coffee, so I'm like rushing through the intro, rushing through the entire show. So we're gonna pack in about a 50-minute episode into about 23 minutes if I keep talking at this rate. Sound good?
That's excellent. Efficient.
Exactly right. Efficient. Great segue. Look at you. Brilliant. So obviously I know what you want to talk about first and foremost is the fact that Kevin Pritchard yesterday called John Hollinger the expert in the world when it comes to efficiency. It was a completely unprompted hat tip. He seemed pretty sincere about it. I might have been the only person who got the reference besides KP and Hollinger himself as the room kind of sat in stunned silence. It was a little bit awkward. But it was still pretty freaking awesome, and I know you're pretty ticked off that you weren't mentioned. How do you feel?
Well, that is why I wanted to bring this up to strongly denounce everything Ben said in his post about it, about me sitting in my cubicle, glaring angrily at the screen. Obviously, Hollinger has earned that, and I can't believe that people didn't get that besides you, because come on, I mean, John Hollinger, ESPN.com, he's probably one of, he was what, number 50 on the most influential list from HoopsWorld.com. So everyone knows who this guy is now. If you're not reading John Hollinger, then you have no credibility in the NBA.
Well, exactly. It's just the local TV guys, man. I mean, that's what Media Day is for, is just to kind of trump up the big personalities in front of the local TV cameras. And I am impressed. Let me get a shout out here real quick to Fox Sports, Matt Smith. That guy does a good job. He got some of his video, actually Media Day video, onto YouTube within like 4 hours after the end of Media Day, which I was completely impressed by. But the other local TV guys, I mean, no offense to them, but I mean, Hollinger has like three syllables, and that's way too complicated. You know what I mean? I mean, I'm not sure if that is that how it is up in Seattle too? I mean, you kind of have these little cliques that develop. You've got, the younger writers who are primarily online, and you've got the newspaper writers who have ink all over their hands, and then you have the TV people who a balloon goes by and they can't take their eyes off of it, and then they see a puppy and it's game over. You know what I mean?
Well, it's always annoying because like the TV cameras take up so much space. You got the camera, and then you've got a guy to hold the microphone. And yeah, like early in Durant's rookie season, when it was just like a madhouse in the locker room. It was like I got a little claustrophobic and was starting to fear for my life because there were too many people crowded around him. We never really had though the young group of writers. That's kind of a neat thing that I've discovered, since started going to Blazers games last year, because as far as the internet people, it was pretty much me. And I mean, I hung mostly with the beat writers since that was
Yeah,
my role, even though I wasn't in the paper.
but in fairness, your ego takes up as much room as a TV camera. So, I mean,
It's like a protective bubble around me.
well, no, I think maybe it's a unique thing for the Portland market. I think that the Blazers are pretty open. If you've got, strong takes and good opinions, and you're obviously intelligent and have a nice website, some of these guys are getting in. OregonSportsLive.com, I don't know if you saw the post I put up this morning. They just killed it. I mean, they interviewed like every single person. I'm pretty sure they interviewed a janitor. I mean, they had literally anyone who was at Media Day. They have an interview and a podcast for you to download. I think that's awesome. It almost made me cry, frankly. I was very impressed. I was like, word, we're on this. Young people, the internet, here we come. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they let people with intelligent, strong takes in there, and they also let you in too. So they're really opening the doors. Open doors, keys open doors, keys open door, keys open doors, yeah. Check it. Keys open door, keys open doors. Throw it on a scale, feed your goddamn self. Get it how you live, we don't ask for help, no. Word on the street is you gon' love how it melt. And I don't come with a pitch, neither the shit sell itself. I yell re-up till I'm locked like Mamiya. And get it cross-state with the grace of Maria. Keep foreign toys, you gon' know us when you see us. Living street tales, worthy of Don Divas. Here's what we got for Media Day. No update on LaMarcus Aldridge. No really good nuggets about the progress of Greg Oden. No concrete information about who might be starting. Nothing other than a new nickname for Andre Miller, the director.
So it was kind of a bust, and I don't think, frankly, that Nate McMillan really wanted to be there at all. KP was his usual chipper self. Nate was basically attending a funeral. I mean, he was just grumbling and upset. I'm not really sure why. Probably because of the TV cameras, but I don't know. I guess I'm not really sure what I expected from Media Day. You've been through your share of Media Days. What's the best Media Day moment from the Sonics that you can think back on and say, "Oh, you know what? That was great."
Oh, well, the best Media Day moment probably has to be they let me in 2002 when I was what
12.
20 and and I was starting my junior year at UW and had SonicCentral.com when I started that long before its current incarnation leading the Save Our Sonics movement way back in the day. So yeah, they let me in. That was their token concession to internet writers and young people was me. I think I interviewed Howard Schultz like a half hour in, and I'm just like, I have never conducted an interview in my life because I didn't do journalism in high school or in college, wasn't on the paper or anything like that. And yeah, there I am with Howard Schultz, and he's like, "So who do you write for?" And like SonicCentral.com, and he actually was very nice, and although I thought it was funny when I went back and looked at it afterwards. He gave me like very different quotes. The big story was Gary Payton missed Media Day and was a holdout, and he had like this very soft pro-Gary message to me, and then a much harder stance to the media TV cameras and in the papers. So I thought that was kind of funny, but yeah, that's probably my favorite Media Day memory. Eventually, they all start to kind of run together. I mean, I don't think that the writers necessarily want to be there, the B writers at least, any more than the coaches and players.
Well, there was one added element that made all the writers really excited to be there, and it's something that's near and dear to your heart, near and dear to my heart, and that would be Twitter. I mean, everyone was just going to Media Day today with the express purpose of being the first person to tweet anything that came out of Media Day, regardless of whether it was interesting. Like Kevin Pritchard Copps, boom, immediately up there. Did you notice? I mean, have you started following all the new people that immediately got added to Twitter, within basically 6 hours before Media Day? It was completely inundated. I was blown away.
Yeah, I mean it's getting out of control. I mean even like on the storm beat, there's a competition between us to be the first one to break all this news. I remember last year, like Tim Duncan, when he didn't or when he did play actually against the Blazers, I think I was the only person in the world to tweet about that before the game, just like for the heck of it. And then now, even with something like that, you'd have four or five people competing, rushing to be the first to their computers or to their phones. I got to get on this. If I'm going to really compete, I don't have a phone that I can really tweet from. I've got like this ancient razor, so I'm going to have to step up my game.
You can't even send a text message tweet.
I can send a text message tweet, but it's such a pain.
That's like the fake Gucci bag of tweeting. So yeah, Media Day was kind of a bust, but it was okay. It was good to see everyone. Obviously, a big story I think that came out was Maurice Lucas is looking really healthy and really healthy. I mean, he's dropped a ton of weight, looked totally fit, upbeat, smiling, really happy to be there, obviously. There's always the debate, should he stay around? Should they look for a different big man coach? And, at the very least, it seems like it's good for Maurice to be around. So I think Maurice will be around. What else was really that interesting? KP kind of threw Mike Bourne under the bus, saying that Mike was the one making the decisions regarding the 15th roster spot. He was the one contacting all the agents, so that way KP didn't have to answer any of the questions about that. And I know you have some pretty strong feelings about who you think should have that 15th roster spot.
Well, I need to know who's in contention first.
Well, so far we only have one name, and we can't pronounce it, so it's going to be a little bit awkward. Now, I say Jaron, but you say Jaron, right?
Yeah, Jaron is like Jaron Rush. You remember Kareem Rush's brother? He was in training camp with the Sonics. No, I think it's Jaron. Jaron and Jason, right?
Well, Jaron and Jason, but so there's two R's, right? But the other Jaron only had one R. Is that how we're
Yes.
distinguishing the pronunciation?
Yes.
It would really help if there was accent marks or apostrophes here. I mean, for once, like, can we just get a J apostrophe Aaron so it's a little bit more obvious? Anyway, the Collins, the one who's not good, The one who didn't play any minutes, the one who's not even on your chart, the one who was below Greg Ostertag on your chart, right?
He was still ahead of Greg Ostertag. I mean, I think you're ahead of Greg Ostertag on my chart.
Yeah, well, I probably played more basketball in the last 2 years than Greg Ostertag, and I only have one leg because my knee's blown out. So that tells you everything you need to know about Greg Ostertag. Shocking development that he's not going to be on the Blazers roster this year. Anyway, Collins, Jay Collins, as I'm going to call him, is the only name that's become public. And KP kind of, I asked him, which way are you leaning, big man, small guy, what are you thinking? And he kind of came out with my favorite quote of the training camp, which was, I'm a former point guard. You can never have too many point guards on your roster. So immediately everyone's scrambling to find out what point guards are available. Patty Mills is apparently still in Australia rehabbing. Dan Dickow's in Suns camp.
I thought Dickow was going to Boston.
No, he turned him down. Yeah, Hoops Hype. HoopsHype.com. It's a website. Have you heard of it?
Brevin Knight's still out there. Bobby Jackson.
Well, Brevin Knight would be an interesting pickup. How come he hasn't been snagged by somebody?
I don't know. There hasn't been a really strong market for those kind of veteran point guards this year. I mean, you figured that the Blazers would probably have added a guy like that if they hadn't signed Andre Miller using their cap space, if they would have gone for like a, for Turkoglu or Millsap, or if one of those deals had panned out. The only team that really has signed someone like that to a guaranteed deal, I think, is Oklahoma City with Kevin Ollie, unless I'm missing someone. Mike Wilkes is going to camp with Atlanta, but no guarantees there, and he's probably, a little lower. Jason Williams in Orlando, but yeah, I mean, Knight struggled last year, and I don't think you'd want him as a number two point guard, but as a number three point guard, he's pretty solid, and as a number four point guard, he's terrific, assuming he's, understands that role.
Isn't having four point guards on your roster a little bit of a punchline? I mean, shouldn't we just be avoiding it just based on the fact that we don't want to be laughing about the fact that Brevin Knight's going to be pushing Jared Bayless for minutes? I mean, shouldn't we just avoid that and say, Jared, look, we're not going to have any minutes for you, but we're not going to make you worry about solidifying your job as the third string point guard? Don't you think it
Well,
might be a little bit smarter to add a third center and just have him as injury protection, just based on solely the message you're sending to Bayless if you add a fourth point guard?
David Kahn, first off, thinks that another point guard is a great idea. So.
Well, and therefore you think another point guard's a great idea. If David Kahn says it, well, that's just the complete truth. Didn't Kahn make a bunch of moves this week? He let a bunch of guys go. Blunt's gone, and was it at, who else? Atkins? Did he let
Yeah,
Atkins
they
go?
waived Chucky Atkins, who's another guy who's in that mix as a veteran point guard, although a level below Jackson and Brevin Knight, in my opinion. They said Mark Blount can look for a trade. They told his agent he can look for a trade within the next week or two, and if he doesn't find anything, then he will surely be getting waived as well. He will not be making the trip and visiting beautiful Lake Minnetonka.
Well, Mark Blount, he's obviously got a lot of trade value. I'm sure his agent will be fielding phone calls for the next 72 hours.
He's going to be on
Anyway.
his cell phone as much as KP.
Yeah, seriously. Okay, so fourth point guard or third center or 19th wing, which area do you think the Blazers should address for this last roster spot?
I mean, honestly, I don't think it matters. I mean, this guy, whoever this guy is not going to play. I mean, realistically, we're going to be looking at someone playing Michael Ruffin's minutes from last year. I mean, if you have an injury at center, it's not like you're going to be plugging in Jaren Collins or whoever this is, because they're going to be behind Juwan Howard on the depth chart. Presumably, he, can step in and play at center for brief stretches, and then you've also got, Aldridge playing in a small lineup and possibly Jeff Pinnegraff when he gets healthy. So.
Here's the argument for why it would matter, and tell me if this argument has any sort of basis. So let's Oden only played what, 60 games last year? Chris Billis had injury problems in the past. Last year he was phenomenally durable, but in the past he's had some injury problems. You really, it would seem, want to keep Aldridge playing his natural position as much as possible, just to limit the wear and tear on him. And Pendergraft's already injured, so given that, you kind of would have to think, if you're going to have a roster space and fill it with a warm body, you might as well fill it with a body who can at least step in and try to play some minutes in case one of those guys happens to go down and you're just a little bit thinner. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I think you got to get your best players on the floor. And if you do have an injury at the middle, which I mean presumably will happen at some point during the season, whether it's serious or not, you don't want to be giving those minutes to some guy who's a fringe player who barely is making the roster. You'd rather give those to Travis Outlaw and slide Aldridge over, and either give Outlaw more minutes or free up some time at the small forward, given, the congestion you've got there. So I think that I would expect to see, if in that scenario, a lot of small ball from the Blazers, whether this 15th player is a center or not.
Okay, well, I'll be a little bit more honest. Here's why I want to add Jay Collins. So you know how I sit courtside for like an hour, hour and a half before every game just to watch guys warm up, right? And
And take kick picks.
exactly, and take my kicks picks. So I sit there kind of minding my own business. The first person last season to talk to me on an opposing team was Jay Collins. Jay Collins asked me what time it was. I gave him the time, and he said, "Thank you, man. I appreciate it." We gotta sign this guy. He's a good culture addition, right? We gotta sign him.
Wow, you're so easily. I've never seen so little celebrity go to someone's head.
It's the little things that count, you know. I mean, I hope that this anecdote is being added to a file somewhere in the Blazers file cabinet that they have on every single potential player they could add, as what kind of a person he is. Because not only is he a Stanford grad, he's blogger friendly, and that counts for something in this day and age.
Well, as you know, the Blazers front office gathers around a conference table in the practice facility every week to listen to our podcast after it's released. So surely they will be taking notes. I will say this about Jaren Collins. I mean, he brings some skills. I mean, he's not a scorer. He's not really a rebounder, but he's a very heady defensive player. He's probably the best guy in the league when it comes to taking charges, in my opinion. I have to go. I've got a file with this. Somewhere I'd have to dig it up, but I think he might have led the league on a per possession basis, or was right near the top last year. And yeah, he and his brother are probably about as good as it comes when in terms of taking charges.
Is that a mentality thing? How you become good at taking charges? That's what I want to know. Well, wasn't there a video that Shane Battier like broke it down and explained how you could take the charge? Do you think that Jay Collins just watched that video like 35 times, or do you think he knows innately how to take a charge?
Well, I remember we had a conversation about taking charges with Nate before one of the playoff games, and he was talking about how he'd heard that coaches sometimes overseas will have their players practice taking charges, and which he thought was a little overboard because of the risk of injury. But I mean, it's a skill. It's also a mindset you've got, and I think it's partially out of necessity. I mean, the fact is that the Collins brothers and guys like that who take a lot of charges aren't the kind of people who are going to be jumpy up and blocking a lot of shots. I remember Dikembe Mutombo criticizing Yao Ming for trying to take charges and saying, "Hey, you're 7'6". You should be trying to block those shots." So it's kind of an either-or thing sometimes for big men. It's rare to see somebody who does both of them well, which is part of what makes Joel Prespilla such an effective defensive player, that he can block a shot and take a charge. And yeah, I mean, there's an art to it. Antonio Daniels once went through this with us reporters in Seattle. He was kind of telling us how the first time you don't want to give, because that you want to give a little bit but not go down, because that kind of lets the referee see that there's some contact. I mean, this was talking about on the perimeter, I should clarify. And then the second time he'd go down, because by that point the referee would be looking for it. One of those fascinating little things that'll be interesting to see how the, not to segue, but the replacement refs deal with.
Well, when Yao Ming takes a charge, seismographs go off. To the tomb, a hot pot of joy and a spoon, trying to make me 40,000 and move. Motel star studded, rock stars and goons, plain clothes wanna run in my room. But nigga, guess who's been Zach? It's your boy Face Mob. Started with an 8-ball. Gotta get this cake, dog. Give niggas a break, nah. You know how the game go. Fuck you think I slang for to go against the grain? No. I'm out here in grind mode, wrapped up in a paper chase. I wanna fuck a fine hoe and candy paint the 88. Don't got no wholesale, cause that ain't how I wanna run it. Here, take these 5 stones and bring a nigga back 100. Gotta see my feet, dude. You do shit a fiend do. If I get too hot in the kitchen, I hit the streets, fool. Money is an issue, and that's on the for shizzle. My nizzle, your block warm and I combine with the fizzle. And make for sure I get to work mine a car at a time. We go to war and you ain't making a dime.
cause I got shit to lose. A nigga out here paying his dues. My baby walking, gotta get him some shoes. It's a new game brewing. Let me give you the rules. Get out of line and I'ma give you the blues. It's a new game brewing. Let me give you the rules. Get out of line and I'ma give you the blues.
But on the replacement ref topic, it's clear and it's been made very apparent that you will not be allowed to talk about the referee situation if you are a member of one of the NBA's teams. And David Stern obviously has his gag order in place. I have never seen a more elusive Kevin Pritchard on any subject in the course of the last 2 years than he was yesterday on the referee topic. I mean, it was to the point where I was, like, laughing in his face. And I wasn't trying to be rude at all. KP, I know you are listening. I apologize for laughing. But he was so tight-lipped, so straight-faced about it. No smile, no smirk, nothing. He just said, I express full confidence in David Stern. I asked him, you know, is there a deep enough pool of talented refs that you think you can get by if, just in case? I express full confidence in David Stern. He just didn't want to go there. And it was kind of freaky. You know what I mean? It's one of those situations where you realize, like, oh, yeah, this is a giant business. This isn't really just entertainment. This is really all about the Benjamins. Because, the league's credibility, the league's bottom line kind of depends on these negotiations. And there's nothing that anyone can do except for David Stern and the referees union. They're the ones that have to reach this agreement.
There's a theory that's been floated on True Hoop and maybe some other places that by even discussing the replacement referees, let alone actually having them call games, that it helps everyone's opinions of the actual referees because of the fact that, you know, compared to the replacement referees, they'll probably look even better. So, that's one interesting thing about where it almost benefits the league to have people criticize them.
Well, that's a pretty far-fetched conspiracy theory, even for me. I mean, so you think they're locking the refs out on purpose just so people will think that their normal referees are better and that they sort of couldn't come up with any other way to improve the referees, so they use the downward pressure of crappy referees to inflate the good referees?
I don't think it's that they can't come up with any other way. It's just the standards are unrealistic. I mean, if you're criticizing NBA referees as a group, in terms of their quality, what is your alternative? Where are the better referees? Because I've watched a lot of college games, and let me tell you, refereeing is not better in the college game. It is substantially worse. So I don't have a lot of sympathy for those arguments.
No, I hear you. And not to mention, the college game is so much slower, especially in person. I mean, you watch those college games, it's just like when someone blows a call, it's even that much more obvious because the correct call was right in front of you at a more reasonable speed than in the NBA. In the NBA, I'm surprised they don't blow more calls, just given how fast these guys are, how creative they are. I mean, people get pissed off about the crab dribble and all that stuff. It's like, how are you supposed to see that if you're looking at it in real time with 10 moving bodies, you know? I think the referees do a great job. I have no problem with them. Never really have. Never really write about it. But I do have a problem with the fact that, you know, the league can't come to an agreement, and they're kind of stringing their refs out over, it sounds like, not too much money, and the member teams aren't allowed to even discuss that. I mean, isn't that a very real influencer of what we might see on the court here in, what, 30, 35 days? And we can't even talk about it? We can't even get their opinions about it?
Certainly with that, with the preseason. I think the thing is, until it actually comes to the point where we have games played with replacement referees, you know, I'm still going to be kind of cynical and take a wait-and-see approach about whether the league will actually be able to get a deal done or not. I mean, the nature of negotiation is that you're most likely to get a deal done when that deadline is looming as it is starting to right now.
So basically what it's going to come down to is all the normal refs are completely ready to go, right? So they're just kind of in a holding pattern. And if the NBA decides to flip the switch and say, okay, we give you these concessions that you wanted, we want you out there, they're basically ready to mobilize within 24 hours, right?
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, you know, they do have a referee training camp each year that they've talked about. This is where they'll have their replacement referees for the first time, especially to go over a lot of points of emphasis and things like that. And it's, you know, their chance to get everybody in a centralized location and discuss interpretations. From a physical standpoint, presumably these guys are keeping themselves in shape. And then the one interesting thing that hasn't gotten a lot of discussion is the fact that they will have to use current referees for games that for the Toronto Raptors home games because of the labor law in Canada and in Ontario specifically. There was an interesting blog post about that a couple weeks ago where they implied that it hadn't been an issue in the previous lockout, but it was. I went and did some digging on this in the Seattle Times archives, and definitely current regular referees were used in Raptors games during 95-96 when the referees were last locked out.
That's wild. So the Canadians are going to have a better product than the Americans. Wow. Typical. Typical. Just another example of the exportation of American labor. I'm just kidding.
Well, like I've always said, 54-40 or fight.
They're getting wild for me, and all the pretty chicks all wanna smile at me. These rap cats, man, they all got this style for me. And if I ever see them, man, they probably bow to me. And when this beat drop, I know they gon' lean. World debut, I know they gon' fiend. Everything Mississippi to the Palm Springs. Girls from brunettes down to blonde queens. These young boys don't know what a don mean. I'm just a bad boy gone clean.
See, what people don't know about us, KP2, is that we can travel through time. Through the magic of the editing studio, we can record an entire podcast yesterday, fast forward through time to today, find out that Ime Udoka just got signed to a non-guaranteed deal today, and 5 minutes later, record this podcast right now. How incredible are we right now?
That's pretty impressive. People are definitely getting their money's worth, especially since they're not paying anything to listen to this podcast.
I mean, that's pretty much our goal, isn't it? To give you your money's worth on a free podcast. That's pretty much, that should actually really be our slogan. Anyway, let's break it right down. Ime Udoka, familiar name, Portland native. Everybody loves him. Ladies are obsessed with him. Apparently he's pretty good looking. Nice guy, runs an AAU team here locally, mentored Mike Moser. Also mentored probably the biggest prospect to come through Portland, in, you know, aside from Kevin Love, in the last 10 years, and that'd be Nigel Williams-Goss. All these pluses for him, but then we've got one slight problem, don't we? And that's that he plays wing. Where or why would you ever add Ime Udoka to this roster? Explain that to me.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, he gives you a different look than the other guys you have at backup wing in terms of, other than Batum, there are not really a lot of defenders at that position. That's certainly not what you're getting from, you know, Webster or Rudy Fernandez or Travis Outlaw when he's at the three. So, he's got that going for him. And, you know, I think that, again, you know, as we talked about earlier in the show, this 15th guy is probably not going to play very much, so it better be someone who's got some positive attributes elsewhere, and Ime fits the bill perfectly in those terms.
Yeah, I mean, he's pretty much everything you could possibly want from a character perspective. Got a nice local angle. It's not like they need to sell tickets, but still, I think there's a community angle to this. A good mentor for all the young guys, really, for Martell, for Nick. Seems like a friendly guy, really laid back. I mean, you see him in public, and he's, most of the time I've seen him, he's just wearing Jordan tracksuits. He's just kind of hanging out. He looks like a character from The Sopranos, you know. It's not like he's all dressed up, you know, putting on airs. I mean, he's kind of a regular guy. So the question becomes, okay, so far we've got two names now. We've got Jay Collins, and we've got Ime Udoka. Do you have a preference either way? What do your stats say?
I think statistically you got to go Udoka. I mean, he slipped a little bit below replacement level last year. Didn't shoot nearly as well from three as he did even his first year in San Antonio, and especially as compared to the year he played in Portland when he really had a career year in terms of shooting the three or in everything for that matter. But, you know, he can still play a little bit. I'm kind of surprised that he wasn't able to get a better offer than this. I mean, maybe, you know, he turned down some other teams where he would have had a chance to potentially be the fifth guy in a rotation on the wing and potentially move into the rotation if you had an injury or two, just because of the fact that he wanted to play at home and return to Portland where he had so much success before, and, you know, a coach he's played for and knows what he brings to the table, and obviously Tony likes that. I still think he can be a competent player in this league. I would have expected him to catch on in a different situation, a little better one for him from a playing time standpoint.
Well, absolutely. So if he is going to see any playing time, if he's going to make a difference on the basketball court, obviously we've got to just assume there's going to be injuries, right? Well, you would think, like you said, his skill set with the defensive abilities would be able to combine. And we talked about this before, combining the trios of guards. He seems like it would be able to combine pretty well with a guy like Blake and Brandon or Rudy. I mean, all these guys, there are some weak on-ball defenders or perimeter defenders on the Blazers roster. So if he was forced into playing time, it would probably be in a position that would actually be pretty beneficial to the Blazers.
Yeah, and if, I mean, you hate to speculate about anything in this sense, but if you were to lose Nicholas Batum, and you wanted someone else to plug into that role in terms of a guy who's going to shoot threes on offense and defend, I mean, that's exactly what Ime did in, 2006-07. So that he can do it. So you've certainly got a lot of confidence there.
Well, it's pretty funny. I'm remembering back to one of our previous podcasts quite a while ago, one of the first ones. We were running down all the available free agents, and I think you had Ime on your list of people you thought should get picked up. Didn't you even have him ahead of Bruce Bowen?
Yeah, I think at this stage of his career, Bowen has aged so dramatically. I mean, it really wasn't a good year for Ime a year ago, but I don't think, given, his age, that it's something that you would consider to be irreversible. I think that, I mean, he's obviously on the downside of his career a little bit, which is odd to say because he didn't make it to the NBA legitimately until he was already 29. But, he should bounce back a little bit from what he did last year, and Bruce at this point was declining pretty quickly, which is why he ultimately decided to retire.
So here's the real question. Let's just assume they add Ime, because it would make a lot of sense if they would, as a 15th guy. Is that not one of the most interesting 15-man collections ever assembled in the NBA? I mean, there are some great stories. You've got Ime, the D-League turned success, local hero. You've got Juwan Howard, member of the Fab Five. You've obviously got players from all over the world, Spain, France, Minnesota. Joel Prisbillo's case. You've got a superstar in Brandon Roy. You've got an uber talented athletic power forwards. You've got, from South Central Los Angeles, Andre Miller. I mean, you've got a great collection of basketball players here. I mean, is this just my Homer glasses of being a Portland native myself and thinking this is a pretty great roster potentially, just in terms of storylines and, interest?
Well, given that not very much came out of the media day with the coaches and front office, as we discussed earlier in the podcast, maybe this is their way of throwing the writers a bone and giving them some more storylines to write about.
Man, I will chew on this bone all day long. Pause. CEOs heard, now here come big cake. But one cat said, Cam, you better recoup. For you back on your block, baby, dead on your stoop. But unhook me up with all this cheddar and loot. The best rap deal of all time, next to Snoop. Money more to clutch, money more to touch. I don't just rhyme, I own liquor stores and such. But yeah, yo, the rap game remind me of the crack game. Niggas wanna get their gun, then start the clap game. For that fame, grow entertainment. Sports, drugs, entertainment. To the arraignment.